Hey, are you looking to buy a new car? Are you stuck in a high-rate loan and looking to refinance? Well, UK Federal Credit Union can help. Right now, UK Federal Credit Union has auto loan rates as low as 2.99% APR. Apply for an auto loan online at ukfcu.org or in person at the dealership. Get your dream car today at UK Federal Credit Union. UK Federal Credit Union. It's banking, only better. Annual percentage rate, member qualification supply, rated subject to credit approval and subject to change. For full disclosure, visit ukfcu.org. Federally insured by NCUA.
Is a paid program on 630 WLAP.
This is the Tom Dupree Show on News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Welcome to the camp. I guess you all know why we're here. My name is Tommy, and I became aware this year. If you want to follow me, got to play pinball. And put in your earplugs, put on your eye shades, you know where to put the caulk.
Welcome to the Tom Dupree Show. This week we have Chad Pennington. Chad is in 2000 was the 18th overall pick. He was drafted by the New York Jets, played college ball at Marshall University, and was a Rhodes Scholarship finalist. He retired from the NFL in 2011 and moved to Lexington with his family, and that's where the story is going to start here today. You just never know who you're going to have on the Tom Dupree Show. Joining us from our staff, Clark Dupree, Philip Sexton, and our host, Tom Dupree.
We don't play rap on the show.
We just did.
All right, whatever. Let's get into it. We're not going to argue about that. Psalm 31. In thee, O Lord, do I put my trust. Let me never be ashamed. Deliver me in thy righteousness. Bow down thine ear to me. Deliver me speedily. Be thou my strong rock. For an house of defense to save me, for thou art my rock and my fortress. Therefore, for thy name's sake, lead me and guide me. Pull me out of the net that they have laid privily for me, for thou art my strength. Into thine hand I commit my spirit. Thou hast redeemed me, O Lord, God of truth. Psalm 31, verses 1 through 5. So Chad Pennington, first of all, me being from Eastern Kentucky, I love the Pennington name. Pennington's Grocery. That's who delivered our groceries when I was 4 years old in Harlan. Pennington Gap, Virginia. That's the route out 421 that would take you over into Virginia. That name is rich with Appalachian heritage. You lived in Knoxville, home of Kaz Walker's, which was the grocery store that we had in Harlan. And our only TV station we could get was Knoxville and Kingsport, and they both had big-time wrestling, Tojo Yamamoto. Anyway, that's a little bit of Appalachian history. I just think you grew up in one of the best places in the country. People get all over me because they hate Big Orange. Well, I've always liked Knoxville because it was a big part of my life, and I'm just interested in hearing a little bit about your growing up in East Tennessee.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here and blessing. And so most of my family is actually from southern West Virginia, so I know all about Appalachia. And so when my parents graduated from Marshall in 1975, they moved to East Tennessee. And I was born in 1976. And so they began their professional career as teachers in East Tennessee in Anderson County. My dad's first job was at Lake City High School. Which is now a middle school in the consolidated schools, Anderson County.
Is that kind of north of Knoxville? Or?
It is, just north of Knoxville, right there in the Clinton-Norris area.
Yeah, right up there.
Right around Norris Lake. And so I was born in 1976, and basically, in a nutshell, I grew up on a Friday night bus. My heroes growing up were my dad's football players. My dad coached high school football for 30 years. He was a math and PE teacher and a football coach. And then my mom was a English teacher for 37 years throughout East Tennessee. So I grew up, you know, being around school, being around my parents, being around the game of football and sports in general. And so my childhood was pretty similar to a lot of our childhoods in the East Tennessee area, just growing up and trying to figure things out. Luckily, in eighth grade, my dad kind of saw that I was a late developer, and from a maturity level and things like that.
Does that mean you were a little bit clumsy or something like that?
I could be clumsy, no doubt about it. And so we made the decision to stay back in eighth grade.
Oh, okay.
And so at the time, I was at a public school in Halls Crossroads at Halls Middle School.
I know where that is.
I was not young enough, and I did not fail, so I could not stay back in the public school system. And so the goal was to go across town, go to Webb School for a year, and then come back and do my high school career at Halls High School. Well, I ended up liking it at Webb and thought it was a great experience. And so my parents decided, well, if we're going to do this, we're going to have to work some summer camps and create some money to pay for tuition. And that's what they did. They made the sacrifice for me to go to Webb School. And so that was a great four-year experience, being able to be coached by a Hall of Famer and Dave Mesky, and have the educational experience that I did at Webb really prepared me for my college experience.
Do you have any brothers and sisters?
So I have a younger sister, she's 3.5 years younger than me, and so she did attend Halls. And so, you know, just one of those childhoods where we were fortunate to have grandparents who settled or who retired actually in Campbell County in La Follette, Tennessee, on Norse Lake. So I spent my summers on Norse Lake. I'm a water dog. I love fishing, skiing, all of that stuff. And so, you know, that's where I spent my summers. And then, of course, you know, when football rolled around, I'd be there in the coach's office or in the locker room. And I was the ball boy for my dad's football teams. And so just a really unique and fulfilling experience for me as a child.
You know, I spent my summers on the western end of the Tennessee River on Kentucky Lake.
Okay.
My dad bought a houseboat down there, and we would drive 4 hours down there. He had a bass boat. We would ski behind it. The barges would come down the river. We'd go behind them and get up on the barge wake. It was a lot of fun being around a lake. I know exactly what that's all about. You know, I also like the fact that you talk about your expanded family, your grandparents being around. Is a childhood that a lot of kids these days don't get to have. They it's, you know, have lots of disruptions and things like that. And you, it seems to me, have in your later part of life begun to kind of move into doing a lot of the things your dad did. That seems to be where your love is. And these guys are going to ask you a lot of questions concerning that. But that must be satisfying, you know, to kind of be able to sort of start doing some of what your dad did, but to build it a little more on your own terms, so to speak, than what I'm sure he had dictated to him by the school system and things of that nature.
Well, there's no question that my passion has been high school football for a long time. I even talked about that when I was playing professionally, about what I wanted to do later. I think most importantly, what drives that passion, two things. One is just being around my family. I feel like that, you know, playing professional ball is such a strain on families, and I feel like they've given their time to me. And so it's my time now to give back to them. And that's a way I can be involved with my family and with my boys, is through the game of football and what they're doing on any level. I always felt like that was a huge advantage for me with my parents being teachers. Although the pay not be sexy, I had access to them at all times. We were able to go on summer vacations. They had their summers off, and I was always around them.
That's nice.
Yeah, and so that was something that I was drawn to, and I just remember those experiences and how important they were. And I always remember my dad saying, listen, Chad, the greatest gift you could ever give your children is yourself. And so I've always tried to keep that in the back of my mind. And so when we decided to settle down, you know, looking at being involved in what they were doing, whatever that may be, I wanted to be involved. And so that has driven that passion as far as high school football. And then also, I think, from a high school football perspective, standpoint, I feel like that is a level that you can truly make an impact on a young man's life.
So for people who don't know what we're talking about, Chad, having been with the New York Jets, Marshall University prior to that, played in the NFL, took the heat from the New York Press. They moved their family here, and he has sort of taken over the football program at Sayre School, which didn't have one for about 40 years, and revived it and kind of built it into something. So I'm going to let these guys, Clark and Philip, sort of start asking some questions along those lines and let them sort of ask some more questions here.
Yeah, of course. You know, one of the questions you already answered, and it was a great answer, you know, when – what kind of drove you to high school football? Because, you know, I think you had a little bit of an announcing career or some color commentary, you know, and there's a lot of people after football, you think of like Tony Romo and, you know, some of these other people where they get these big contracts.
Edelman just signed on to something, I think.
Yeah.
Some show.
But you definitely went with a route that is not money motivated. It's more of a passion to help children and help the younger youth. And, you know, when I look at your career, you didn't get a whole lot of scholarship offers, it seems like, to be a first round draft pick, you know, and when you look at that time frame and kind of what's changed since then, you know, there's been a huge shift from a digital transformation to where, you know, I'm a Miami fan, huge Miami Hurricanes fan. So I think of people like Ray Lewis. You know, that man was a two-star athlete. You know, so there are a lot of instances like that that don't happen anymore. How are you able to, you know, from that standpoint, kind of help, you know, set your kids apart at Sayre?
Well, to back up for a second, so like you said, I wasn't highly recruited out of high school. I had two offers to Tennessee Chattanooga and Middle Tennessee State. With my dad being a football coach, he had a friend who had two players playing at Marshall University at that time when I was a junior and senior in high school. One of those players happened to be a receiver, and he was in town visiting my dad's friend who was his high school football coach. He needed someone to throw to him and to keep his skill work up during the summer. I went over to throw with him, and he said, you know what, you ought to come up to Marshall's camp. It's a smaller camp, you know, let you get evaluated. I think you can play. And so I went up to camp, and after camp, they offered me a scholarship. And so that was the only reason I attended Marshall. Now, my parents did go to Marshall. My family's from Southern West Virginia, but that was never in my mindset nor a conversation we had. And so, you know, I felt like at the time, my goal from a college student athlete standpoint was to play at the highest level I could play.
Hey, how many credit cards are in your wallet? The only card you need is the UK Federal Credit Union Visa Platinum Card, which offers rates as low as 7.24% APR. When unexpected expenses arise, you need a credit card with options, like the UK Federal Credit Union Visa Platinum Card with no annual fee and no balance transfer fee. Annual percentage rates apply, member qualifications apply, but the rate is variable and it applies to Visa or Platinum Card, subject to credit approval and subject to change. For full disclosures, visit ukfcu.org, federally insured by NCUA.
But play. I wanted to be able to contribute on the field. I wanted to be part of that experience. I didn't just want to run through the tee at Tennessee or any other college. I wanted to be in, you know, really part of that program, and Marshall gave me that opportunity. And so then, I redshirted 5 years later. Here I am, a first round draft pick, and played 11 years in the NFL. And so you know, that's kind of my road. And then, like you said, my degree was in broadcast journalism. I really wanted to take a look at that. And so the first year after I retired, I worked for Fox with NFL on Fox and did 7 NFL games. Worked with Sam Rosen, who is the ultimate professional. Really enjoyed that experience. Loved every minute of it. But I was in the same rat race I was in when playing. I was doing more traveling. You know, instead of leaving out on Saturday evening and playing a game on Sunday and getting back, I'd have to leave out on Thursday. Most of my games were on the West Coast, so I didn't get back till Monday. I still miss Thanksgiving, Christmas, and all the holidays, and that's just something that I was like, I can't do that to my family. They've already paid their dues. My wife has paid her dues. My children have paid theirs. And so I wanted to make sure that whatever I did from that point on was family-oriented, family-centered, and to be able to share my experiences that I had accumulated over the years with others. And so that's where, once we decided to move to Central Kentucky, we looked at about 6 to 8 different cities. Really wanted to, we had kind of a criteria we were looking at. We wanted to be closer to family, closer to Marshall. We wanted good medical, good schools, just great opportunity to raise a family. And Lexington kind of kept answering all those questions. And so when we settled here in Central Kentucky in 2012, then we had to take a look at, okay, where are my kids going to go to school? What are we going to do as a family? And so that's where I started to engulf myself just in their lives, and started to coach some middle school football, and loved doing that, loved sharing my experiences with those middle school students. And then once my oldest, Cole, was looking at different high schools, I really loved the academic experience at Sayre. I felt like that really would give him an opportunity to be able to pursue whatever he wanted to do academically post-high school. They didn't have football. And so Coach Rob Goodman and I started talking about that probably 6-7 years ago. And he was a big fan of that. I think, number one, he felt like he was tired of being beat by Holy Cross and some of the other teams that had football players on their basketball team, and they were much more physical. Yeah. and that type of thing. So he was a big fan of it. He knew what football could do for the school. And so then we started to really think about it. And then, you know, when we were talking about it, my goal was not to coach. I wanted to be behind the scenes. I wanted to look at it from an organizational standpoint, from a big picture standpoint, to make sure we were doing all the things that would create sustainability. Anything I've ever done, whether it be at TLS or at Sayre, I want to make sure that it lasts past me. I don't want it to fail once I leave. I will be gone at some point in time. And I want to make sure that it has longevity and has sustainability. It's not just a flash in the pan. Well, as we got closer to making that decision, Sayre School was like, well, if we're going to do this, you need to coach. And so I'm like, well, okay, you're calling me out, and so I'll answer the call. And so we started the program in 2018. And, you know, to answer your question, my goal has been, the best advice I've ever received in beginning a program was, build the program around the lives of your kids. Make sure that it's intertwined within the fabric of what they're doing. I'm a big believer in multi-sports. I want to make sure that I'm working with all of my coaches so that my players don't have a conflict and they have to choose between one sport and another. I'm 44 years old. I don't know what I'm going to do with the rest of my life. Why would I ask a 16-year-old to try to specialize? That's not fair, in my opinion. So everything we've tried to do, academically speaking, their schedules are rigorous academically. And so I want to make sure that they can take care of their academics, that they can learn time management, that they can learn responsibility, accountability. That's one of the biggest things we're working on now. The school does such a great job in preparing our kids individually speaking and really taking ownership in their academic process. But when they come to me, they've got to learn that team aspect. They can't just do it by themselves. And that's what's so great about the game of football is, yeah, no matter how good you are, yeah, the other 10 guys matter to your success, and you have to be accountable to them. And so that's the piece where I think football and athletics in general can be married with academics. And you look at the full development process of the child. It's not academics first and athletics second. It's everything together, and how we use everything together to develop that young student athlete is very important to me.
One of the things that I've seen when somebody is told to specialize at a young age, when that goes away, sometimes their whole life goes away. It can be very destructive to young people, and that if they were urge to have other sports or other things to fall back on. And I think that's a really, really important message. And I hope you'll really keep on that. Play baseball, play basketball, and keep playing them on into your, as long as you can, without having to choose one sport over the other.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the ball stops spinning for all of us. At some point in time, we all stop playing the games we love. And so what's the end goal here? Is the end
goal have a game that goes beyond that.
Right. And so the end goal for me is, what have my players learned from our program that's going to sustain them as adults in society.
Exactly.
And making sure that they've taken things from our program
to go, good stuff,
hey, right, if I'm going to take on this challenge, I can do this because this is what happened to me at football at Sayre, and I learned that, and now I've got the confidence to take that on.
That's it.
And so that's a quick story. I remember Corey Corrigan coming to me, and I wanted to do business with him in Winter Circle Trailers because we needed a travel trailer. And so I wanted to do business with the Sayre family. And so we're talking about it, and I said, okay, Corey, you know, how much I want to do business with it. I'm okay with paying for it. He said, take the trailer. I said, wait a second. I'm not asking for a freebie. He said, take the trailer. The business principles that I use for Winter Circle, I learned those through high school football. And he said, so I know what
high school football is. So now you're mentioning his game on a, or his company on a podcast, you know, which is
I hope nobody goes and tries to ask for a free trailer though.
That's the goal. No, they're gonna pay for the trailer if they heard it on here. Yeah.
I think the topic of discussion here though, something you learn through football is how to respond to adversity. And I think that's really important in life. And I think football is a beautiful way to kind of mirror life in that aspect.
There's no question, Clark. It's so amazing how many life lessons you experience through the game of football and how many correlations and analogies I always just make in my everyday life that are centered around the game. And so that's a big part of it. And the adversity piece is true. One of our core values at Sayre is within our football program is resiliency. You're going to get knocked down. It is something that's going to happen.
It's inevitable.
How do you respond to that? And so that's something that I've been able to see within our football team as well as in our athletic programs. And it was very tangible. We were playing Eminence in week one this past year. We're down 10 points, getting ready to be down 10 points actually with 5 minutes left. And I called timeout and I said, listen, it's not going down like this, fellas. We're not just closing up shop here. We're not giving in. So you're going to have to make a decision right now to fight. That's all I want to see is fight. And so they actually scored. And here we are down 10 points, 34 to 24, with 10 minutes left. And we come back and we win the game with 30 seconds left. And from that point on, their mindset changed. There was no challenge that they didn't feel like they could take on. And then even when they were in tough situations throughout games, they didn't blink. The adversity, the challenge, whatever that was, a bad call, a great play, it didn't matter. They just didn't blink. And so that's a great life lesson because there's going to be things where you can't blink. You can't flinch. You've got to fight through it, whether it be with your family or in business or whatever. And so just those little things, that's what I'm drawn to. The X's and O's part, that's great. The scheme, all of that.
Comes with it.
That's not what I'm not really focused on that. I mean, we can create any scheme we want. But at the end of the day, it's what are they taking away from their experience?
Well, and when you teach a mentality like that, result aside, you know, it's a win-win, right? Because obviously in that case, you guys ended up coming out on top. That confidence snowballed into something greater. But on the other end of the spectrum, if you guys had lost that game, right? I mean, you go in the locker room and say, hey, what do we learn from this?
Absolutely. And one thing that I learned from Teddy Atlas, I actually had a chance to train with the great boxing trainer Teddy Atlas for a year. And a lot of the footwork in the boxing ring is similar to the footwork at the quarterback position. But most importantly, what I learned was his mentality, his mental toughness, and his thought process. And one of the things that he taught me was, when you're in the ring, a boxer, when he gets punched, he has a decision to make competitively. Does he just get knocked out? Does he fight, but he's just fighting, going through the motions and getting patted on the back and he still loses? Or does he consciously make a choice to get back in the match and try to win?
All right, we got to jump right now. We got to go to a break. You're listening to the Tom Dupree Show. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
You're just minutes away from updating your brain's newsfeed with the biggest trending news on News Radio 630 WLAP.
Hi, this is Tom Dupree. What actually makes a difference in life? Is it Bitcoin? Is it gold? Perhaps it's bonds, racehorses? No. Of any economic entity in which you can invest, the ones which actually make a difference are corporations. They are maligned, taxed, demonized, run by left-wing ideologues, but still, they must produce a profit. They cannot afford to invest in things the way that government does. Their investments must show a profit. Their investments must be productive. We believe our clients like to think their investments are being productive, both for society and for them. For a free review of your retirement investment portfolio, call Dupree Financial Group at 859-233-0400 and be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show Saturdays at 7 a.m. at News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com.
Millions are tuning into Newsmax TV and going to Newsmax.com for real news. Now, some polls give Joe Biden a high job approval, even 60%. Newsmax is asking if you agree with that. Do you really approve of Joe Biden, his policies, and $4 trillion in spending? And do you think President Trump did a better job? Let us know. Vote in the Newsmax poll right now. Just text the word BIRD to 39747. That's BIRD to 39747. Let America know who you like better, Biden or Trump. And find the results on Newsmax TV. It's now on all major cable systems, smart TVs, and OTT platforms like Roku, Pluto, Zumo, YouTube, and more. Newsmax has great shows with Greg Kelly, Michelle Malkin, and Mike Huckabee. So check your channel guide and vote now in the Newsmax poll. Text BIRD to 39747. That's BIRD to 39747. Let your voice be heard.
I'm an emergency medical technician. Today, I arrived at the scene of a crash. I've seen enough of these to know it's a bad one. Young female driver, unconscious. I see her phone on the floor. The screen says OMW, on my way. She never hit send. Be safe, Kentucky. Buckle up and put the phone down.
Paid with funds through the Kentucky Office of Highway Safety.
Me, but also you. The Pharaoh fast-forwards his favorite foreign film, Powder Donut. Okay, what's my line?
The only line I see here on the script is get options based on your budget with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive.
Oh, man, that's a tongue twister, huh? I'm sorry, I'm going to need a few more minutes. Bulbous Walrus, the Bulbous Walrus.
The Name Your Price tool, only from Progressive.
The owl ran afoul of the comatose coxswain.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
To remind pet owners that Progressive covers pets on our auto policy at no extra charge, we're making a really cute pet-themed radio commercial. You gotta see this dog. It's a little puffball. It looks like a piece of cotton candy that I could just eat up. Oh, and it waddles when it walks. He's a little ducky dog. Oh, I wish you could see it. We really should have planned this better.
Get coverage for your pets with an auto policy from Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Coverage for cats and dogs included with the purchase of collision coverage and is subject to policy terms.
Moderate to heavy showers will be on and off with us throughout the day on this Saturday. Along with the rain, we will also be dealing with gusty winds and cooler temperatures. Highs by this afternoon only topping out into the mid-50s, some only into the lower 50s. I'm WKYT, meteorologist Adam Bernstein.
Broadcasting live 24-7 from the heart of Big Blue Nation, this is News Radio 630 WLAP, an iHeart radio station.
When it's all about the money, you gotta do it right. On the How to Money podcast, investors Joel and Matt talk tips and tricks for handling the money you have in a purposeful, thoughtful way that works for your lifestyle, so you can really start living a rich life.
Turns out that debt makes you dumber, potentially lowering your IQ by 13 points.
And we all know that I don't have the points to spare, buddy. So, debt really is more than just the interest you're forking over.
Listen to How to Money on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Think about hiring a painter to do some work for your home or business inside or outside, because it is the time to start thinking about your home's exterior. Do what I did. Call Serta Pro Painters. This is Ryan Lemon, and we've just had the best luck with Serta Pro. Top-notch professionalism from the initial consultation to doing the job. It's completely worry-free with Serta Pro. Schedule your free estimate at SertaPro.com. That's Serta with a C, by the way. And I love that each Serta Pro Painter's business is independently owned and operated. Call the pros at Serta Pro and do it today.
If your basement smells like mildew, it could be coming from the last place you'd expect, your gutters. That's right. Clogged gutters cause rainwater to overflow and seep right into your foundation. Now I'm smelling costly repairs. Leaf Filter, America's number one gutter guard, is a one-time investment that keeps debris out and comes with a lifetime transferable warranty. So schedule your free estimate now. Call 844-300-LEAF. That's 844-300-LEAF. Or visit tryleaffilter.com and keep gutters clean for good.
630 WLAP.
Welcome back to the Tom Dupree Show for the second half of the hour. Joining us just this week, Chad Pennington. He's a former NFL quarterback and now is reinvesting back in the high school sports scene. Without further ado, Clark Dupree, Philip Sexton, and our host, Tom Dupree.
Okay, Chad, I think these guys have a few questions about your professional football career that they want to get in before we we've talked about these other things, and but they've got a few questions and I'll just let them go for it.
So I've got one. So to bounce off of what you and Clark were discussing, you know, dealing with adversity, when you look at your history at Marshall and discussions I've had with Clark, football is the ultimate team game. You know, you've got to have a receiver that catches the ball and doesn't fumble it. You've got to have blockers that keep you off of your butt. You've got to have a defense that, you know, can keep you in the game. One person that I'd kind of like to know, like, your history with, that as a team you had to help through a lot of adversity, and the reason that he was on the team was through adversity, is Randy Moss.
Well, Randy.
I've heard of him.
Yeah, right, just every once in a while. Just so you know, you did mention, you know, Tom had mentioned earlier about New York. So any question you ask, I'm prepared for. 8 years in New York prepares you about anything.
We're pretty tough around here.
Yeah, you guys are tough. Throwing me hard balls here. You know, Randy, first of all, people don't realize his competitive nature and how competitive he was and how he loved and still loves to compete at whatever he's doing. And so just a little background on his story. He had a full ride to Notre Dame and got into an incident in high school. And so they took that offer away, and he ends up going to Florida State and then leaves Florida State after his freshman year. And so we were fortunate enough, by being an FCS school at the time, that he could transfer to Marshall and not have to sit out a year. And so he comes in 1996. My personal background was I played as a true freshman in 1995 due to injury. And then we had a coaching change where Coach Jim Donna went to Georgia. Bob Pruitt comes in from Florida, and Coach Pruitt decides to redshirt me. And so that was a little bit of adversity I had to go through, but also try to see the light at the end of the tunnel, what his ultimate vision and plan was, which was amazing because we ended up being 50-4 in 4 years and won more games in the 90s than any college football program in the nation. But from Randy's standpoint, you know, it was a rebirth for him. And, you know, he was one of those guys. His favorite period of the day was one-on-ones, where it would be him against the DB, and it was just straight competition.
Probably chirping. I bet
and,
he was chirping.
Chirping and hurdling them and doing, I mean, he would just make them look silly. And so, and then as you played with him, you just saw his natural athletic ability and how simple and easy he made things look. So it was really fun to play with him. He played in 28 college games. He scored 54 touchdowns. There wasn't a game he didn't score a touchdown in. The only game he didn't catch a touchdown pass was in the quarterfinals of the FCS playoffs in 96, and they basically triple-teamed him, and we rushed for 314 yards, and then we gave him a reverse, and he scored from about 50 yards out. But just to see, you know, and one of the amazing things with his athleticism, too, when we moved into FBS in 1997 in the Mid-American Conference, we felt like, okay, we're moving into 1A. Surely to goodness they see, you know, what a good athlete looks like. And every school we played, it didn't matter if it was a Mid-American Conference school. We played West Virginia that year. We played Ole Miss in the bowl game. they always would test him one-on-one first. And every time we would beat them. And then they would go to double-teaming him after that. But they just never could really buy into the hype of Randy Moss. And then you see what he did in his rookie year at Minnesota. Yep. And it just – what's the most amazing thing about Randy, regardless of the level of competition he played, he still made those same plays. The productivity never decreased.
Yeah. And that style, I think, you know, and you can correct me, I mean, his style of play was something that people hadn't really seen before, just that go up and get it. Like, I'm going to
Well, they had never seen a receiver that checked all the boxes.
Yeah.
They had never seen a receiver that was 6'5", that ran a 4.3, that had soft hands, that could do all of those things. They would see a receiver that could check three or four of the boxes, but not all of them.
Right.
Randy checked all of those boxes.
We had a little guy here at Kentucky, nowhere near the Randy Moss, a guy named Derek Abney. I don't know if you remember hearing about
him. I know of Derek, yes.
Solid punt returner.
Incredible punt returner. And if he were one-on-one, he would catch the ball and he would score a touchdown. That was just how lethal he was in a one-on-one kind of deal. And I know, but Randy, big and rangy kind of guy, you know, just it's different. Different people, but it's the talent.
Right.
It's,
and when Randy was covered, he was still open. I mean, right. It's one of those things. And so your best receivers and the ones that the quarterback gravitates toward are those who, no matter when and where you throw them the football, you always feel like you have a chance that they're going to make a play. And if they don't make the play, they're going to make sure that the defense doesn't make them. Yeah. So there's a sense of confidence and trust there that is quite remarkable.
Well, and I think you can attribute some of the change in today's game to the demand for dynamic players, right? You look at guys like Calvin Johnson in the 2010s and somebody like DK Metcalf even right now. I mean, that's a guy who is simply dynamic. Yeah, I mean, you look at what Belichick did in 2011 with Hernandez and Gronkowski. That dynamic of an athlete, especially twofold, had never been seen before. And so I'm interested to hear about your thoughts on how the game has changed since you've played, even.
Well, from an NFL perspective, there's two biggest changes. The two biggest changes are, number one, the entertainment value around the game. The entertainment value around the game is tenfold what it was even 10 years ago. And so the access that the fans have digitally, I just went through a social media presentation with the NFL yesterday and just listening to how they are approaching it, how fans are consuming the game digitally now more than television or print and radio and things like that. And so the entertainment value has certainly changed, and that's good. That's a good benefit for the players. Secondly, the game has changed in that the teams are younger. So when I was a rookie, half of our team was over 30. I had 15 to 16 vets that I could really study and watch. Even if there was a bad apple in the vet group, I didn't have to pay attention to him. I had some good vets to look at. That dynamic has changed. The teams are much younger. The average age of an NFL team is 25.4 years old now, and it's getting younger as we speak. 9 years later from my rookie season when I went to Miami, we only had 6 veterans on the team that were 30 years or older. So that has changed. And so, and you worry about that sometimes because of the quality of the game. But the veteran experience is really crucial to the young players' experience and learning from those vets, learning how to be a professional. And that's one of the biggest things. People talk about the speed of the NFL. It's not necessarily the speed of the NFL that's different than college, because in college you still have guys who run 4.4 and 4.3 and 4.5. The difference is the knowledge that comes with the speed. So in college, you're playing against a 4.4 DB who's a second-year player, good player, but his anticipation and his knowledge isn't there. And once you go to the NFL, you're playing against a DB who's 8 years older than you and still runs a 4.4. So his knowledge, his anticipation, what he knows compared to what you know is on a different stratosphere, right, really. And so that's a big difference.
Well, and I think there's a calmness that comes with having veterans on the field. I always hear, you know, these kids, you're right, like the young, like they get younger and younger. It seems like they're developing at a faster pace than they ever have. But there's a calming presence when you have a veteran out there. I worked in Indianapolis, obviously, in 2019. And Anthony Costanzo is a guy that they had, a left tackle who had been in Indy his whole career. I don't know exactly how long it was, but I want to say upwards of 10 years. And you could visibly see there were guys skill-wise that were much better than him. Quentin Nelson, the left guard. I mean, I could go on and on. But when Costanzo was not there, it looked different.
Yeah, absolutely. And that you're alluding to, football is still a people game. It's a people business.
Right.
It's about people. It's not about schemes and things like that. That's on the outer edges, but it's truly about the people. And so that's what's so important. The other thing that I think is interesting, when you're looking at generations, so working with the NFL Legends community, we deal with four different generations of retirees. You know, we deal with baby boomers, Gen Xers, Gen Zers, and millennials. And so what we're learning, and the best way that I had heard it put in words was in a presentation I was in, today's generation of young athlete, they don't need us for information. So when I was growing up, I needed the older generation for information. That's where you got your information.
That's because they got all the answers.
Well, and the reason they don't need us for information is why? The internet. They're exposed to the internet.
Yeah.
But here's what they still need us for, and here's to your point about Costanza. They still need the older generation for interpretation. So they're getting the information, but they don't have the wisdom to interpret the information that they have. And so that's why you still need those veterans on your team to go, okay, I know you know what to do, but let me tell you why you're being asked to do that. Let me tell you how to do it better.
It's important.
Let me tell you how to do it more efficient. You're wasting movement there. You got all this energy. Calm down. Do it here, and you're going to save yourself. And so that's the interpretation piece is still important.
It's so interesting, right? Because, I mean, you and I have both been blessed to be around the game. You obviously a lot more than myself, but I hear people talking about draft prospects and, you know, this team needs to do that in order to be good next year. And I'm sitting here thinking, like, it's very hard for a rookie to come in and make an impact. I don't even know why the draft process is, I mean, it's obviously noteworthy, but, you know, people are talking about life and death, and it's like, you know, a kid like that is 1 in 100, 1 in 1,000.
Well, unfortunately, Clark, they are asked to contribute at an earlier age in their career now. So they do have to, first of all, they are coming in more prepared from a repetition standpoint. With when you look at the game and 7-on-7s and all the access to personal trainers and the different camps and all that, they are coming into the game more prepared. They still don't have the wisdom and experience and knowledge that the vets do, but they are coming in the game more prepared. And unfortunately for them, they're being asked to perform much earlier in their career. I was able to sit for 2 years and 4 games, and then I was thrown into the fray.
That makes an impact, man.
Huge impact. I was completely ready for that time. And so now we're asking, let's look at our quarterbacks this year. You've got Zach Wilson. He's 21 years old. He's going to be asked, they're going to place a $1 billion corporation on a 21-year-old's shoulders. That's unfair.
It's a lot.
I mean, there are two men in the building that carry records when you're talking about football, the head coach and the quarterback. There's no one else in the building, administrators or players, that when their name is mentioned, they talk about a record. They only talk about a head coach record and a starting quarterback record. They don't talk about the right tackles record or the wide receiver or the defensive back. And so that's the professional part that we're placing on our younger players that they're just quite – frankly, not ready for yet.
It's so hard on them. I mean, I've seen it firsthand. I was blessed to play with guys that are making money still to this day. And I mean, you see a guy, you know, I had a fraternity brother by the name of Devlin Hodges. And in 2 seconds, he's Pittsburgh's QB1, right? He started the season in the fourth slot, right? Barely making P squad. And, I mean, the guy is resilient. You know, we talked about that earlier, and he wins 3 games, right? I mean, but still, that's a lot of pressure. It takes a special kind of guy to be able to take that kind of responsibility and say, you know what, I don't care about what everyone else is saying. I'm going to do my job.
And especially in today's environment with social media and our younger generation being caught up in how many likes they have and how many friends they have.
Instant gratification.
Right. And so, you know, making sure that their self-worth is not in that. And so your guys who create longevity in the NFL are the guys who, number one, keep football at the forefront because you can get caught up in the entertainment piece of it. That's one. But then two, don't take themselves too seriously. Understand what they're there for. Understand they're still there to learn, and they're constant lifelong learners. And then they learn how to be a professional, and they make. We still don't call it a career. None of us call it a career. We call it an experience because it's going to be over at some point in time. You don't get to do this until you're 65.
That's amazing, man. I think it all comes back to, just being able to handle yourself and understand that we're put on this earth to learn.
Right.
I mean, at the end of the day, personally, in my opinion, I don't think you're going to be successful at anything if you don't approach it with a playful and curious attitude.
Right. Absolutely. You've got to be able to come in there with some humility. Understand it's not all about you, and that there are things to learn regardless of how much you know or what your experience level is, and we can constantly learn from each other. And I think one of the transitions we're seeing now is how our older generation can learn from our younger generation, and then we try to help our younger generation try to channel that energy and that enthusiasm into the right arena so they can be more successful.
That's it. If you don't, one of the things that I see with young people nowadays that I find alarming, they have a lack of intellectual curiosity. They don't seem to be concerned or interested in why this is happening or why that is happening. They don't ask the question, I wonder why. It's as if they feel like they already know, sometimes at very young ages. And the only way I've been able to build anything in my life, because I wasn't particularly good at anything, including sports, was to keep asking why. And then that's how I would end up making a sale if I was doing something. Do you like, and you ask the questions, then you have a story to tell somebody because you asked questions. I think if you can get people to ask questions, in whatever role you're in, a football coach, a teacher, doesn't matter. That's important.
It really is, and I think an interesting statistic I came across the other day was like the average attention span now of our youth is dwindled down to 8 seconds, and it may be more in the 6 second range. And that's due to social media and internet and having that access to information. And so they can find that answer really quickly. Instead of taking the time to learn why. And so now if somebody reads an article on Google, they're now an expert with that 10-minute article that they read instead of a life-long work of really studying a field. And everybody wants to be a jack of all trades, and then what do? You end up being a master of none. And
right.
So, that's something that I think our older generations, including mine, can shed some wisdom to our younger generation. Just, hey, slow down. There are some things that I know we think we got all the answers now, but there are some things that the old hats know that will really be beneficial for you moving
forward. So Elizabeth says I need to ask about your foundations. Help tell me about your foundation or foundations.
Right. Well, we started the First and 10 Foundation in 2003. It's really moved more to a private family foundation. We were a public foundation for quite some time where we really tried to focus on southern West Virginia and the tri-state area, East Tennessee, as well as what area we were playing in. And so now we've kind of shifted that focus here to Central Kentucky as well. And it's all about just improving the quality of life, whether it be we had a personal experience with leukemia with my wife's father. And so really understanding the patient family services side of hospital care, because a lot of times we focus so much on the patient.
So do you all make grants?
Used to do a lot of grants. We're more now in just to the private family foundation of reaching out to certain organizations and supporting different causes. And then we love, especially in our rural areas, whether it be in Eastern Kentucky or Southern West Virginia, East Tennessee, we love the community center idea, because a lot of times in these smaller towns, that community center can be a hub of life, because they don't have direct access to a city, a Lexington, a Charleston, a Huntington, a Knoxville. And so that community center can be a place where you can really, really affect all ages of the community from 5 to 85.
That's great.
And everywhere in between. So that's been a lot of fun. We continue to look for opportunities there to partner with businesses and people who are like-minded. I think the most important thing that I've learned is that it's so important, especially in today's age, transparency. People want transparency.
They crave it.
Yes, and they want organizations that they can partner with to put their money back into places where they live, work, and play, and know exactly where their money's going. They want to make sure that their money's going to the people that need it, not for the next computer or the administrative cost. They want to get it out into there. And right. So people are really focused on that transparency piece, and we've always been focused on that as well.
That's great. We got about 3 minutes left. What's next for Chad Pennington? When all this is over with, then what's the next step?
Yeah, so, you know, I'm looking into the future here, and, you know, eventually I'll be able to pass this Sayre football program.
You're going to try to play football again?
No, absolutely not. You wouldn't want to do that. That would spell doom and gloom for your team if you asked me to play. But I think it's really focus on my three boys right now, get them to a place where they feel comfortable, where they're going to go to college, whether they're going to play in college or not.
How old is Cole now?
Cole's 17. He's a junior. He has two offers from Marshall and Eastern Kentucky, so that's exciting.
How about it, man?
And we'll see. We'll go through the camp season this summer, which – recruiting has been difficult because of the COVID experience, but we'll see what my other two want to do. And then when they find their way into college, then Robin and I will sit down and kind of reevaluate and see what we want to do and be part of Central Kentucky in another way.
There you go. Well, Philip, what do you got?
Well, I took his mic. So he's shut down for this hour, but Philip will be back next hour. Hey, Chad, thanks for joining us, and thanks for giving back. I mean, you are changing lives with these kids that you're coming in contact with, and I've heard it firsthand from the parents who are so incredibly thankful for your,
it's for sure,
for your gift back.
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, it's making a big difference. Big difference.
And you change people's lives forever with the impact you have on them in high school a lot of times, so... Thank you.
Good chopping it up, Chad.
Thank you. Yeah, good talking to you guys. Really enjoyed it.
All right. The next hour, we'll be back with our financial guys talking about the markets. So stay tuned. This is powered by Dupree Financial Group, coming to you from our studios on Main Street in Lexington. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
When the news goes viral, we'll bring you the facts at the top and bottom of the hour on News Radio 630 WLAP.
If you're wondering what's going on in the markets these days, you're not alone. It seems the conventional metrics of discerning value in markets has been thrown out the window. Perhaps it may help to look at interest rates, which are lower than ever. They are lower than in my dad's time in the business and in my granddad's time. Interest rates can justify valuations in the stock market, and lower interest rates can support higher valuations. So maybe things aren't that crazy. We talk about stuff like this at Dupree Financial Group. For a no-obligation review of your retirement investment portfolio, call us at 859-233-0400 or go to DupreeFinancial.com. And be sure to listen to the Tom Dupree Show Saturdays from 7 to 9 a.m. at News Radio 630 WLAP and WLAP.com. That's Dupree Financial Group at 233-0400.
Hey, are you looking to buy a new car? Are you stuck in a high-rate loan and looking to refinance? Well, UK Federal Credit Union can help. Right now, UK Federal Credit Union has auto loan rates as low as 2.99% APR. Apply for an auto loan online at ukfcu.org or in person at the dealership. Get your dream car today at UK Federal Credit Union. UK Federal Credit Union. It's banking, only better. Annual percentage rate, member qualification supply, rated subject to credit approval, subject to change. For full disclosure, visit ukfcu.org. Federally insured by NCUA.